events had been planned to commemorate this. On the 20th of June, the precise day she had first mounted the throne, the royal heads of Europe, Indian princes, dignitaries and representatives from all corners of the empire, even the Hawaiian queen, Liliuokalani, converged upon London. West End shopkeepers adorned their windows in red, white and blue. Royal standards and Union Jacks, festoons of flowers and coloured garlands could be seen hanging from every sombre stony edifice. At night, the embassies and clubs, hotels and institutions throughout St James's and Piccadilly threw the switches on the electric lights and turned on the gas jets, illuminating the giant crowns and the letters V and R affixed to their buildings. Her Majesty's loyal subjects came to the centre of town from the suburbs and tenements. They punched their rail tickets from Kent and Surrey and pushed their way into the crowded streets, hoping to catch a glimpse of a royal coach or a princess in diamonds. They placed candles in the windows of their homes when the long summer twilight faded away and toasted their monarch's health with beer and champagne and claret. There was a service of thanksgiving at Westminster Abbey, a state banquet, a military review at Windsor, and even a children's fete in Hyde Park for 2,500 boys and girls who were entertained by 20 Punch and Judy puppets, 8 marionette theatres, 86 peep shows, 9 troops of performing dogs, monkeys and ponies, as well as bands, toys and gas-inflated balloons, before being treated to a lunch of lemonade, cake, meat pies, buns and oranges. Throughout the summer, there were Jubilee commemorative concerts, lectures, performances, regattas, picnics, dinners and even a yacht race. As the Jubilee corresponded with the traditional London season, there were also garden parties and balls. Ladies dressed themselves in the summer's fashion, lace-trimmed bustled gowns in black and white silk and hues of apricot yellow, heliotrope and gobelin bleu. A magnificent ball was held at the Guildhall, where the Prince and Princess of Wales entertained their visiting regal relations, as well as the Prince of Persia, the Papal Envoy, the Prince of Siam, and the Maharaja Holkar of Indore. All of high society danced beneath the banners and cascading arrangements of perfumed flowers. Tiaras and tie pins sparkled in the mirrors. Young debutantes were introduced to suitable sons. The whirl of Victorian life spun round and round to the dreamy melody of a sweeping waltz. Then, there is the other version. This is the tale of 1887, which most choose to forget. To this day, only a scant number of history books recount it. Surprisingly few people even know that it occurred. Yet in that year, this story filled more column inches than the descriptions of royal parades, banquets and fetes put together. That Jubilee summer had been an exceptionally warm and rainless one. The clear blue skies that presided over the season's carefree picnics and al fresco parties had shriveled the fruit harvest and dried out the fields. Water shortages and an absence of seasonal agricultural labouring jobs only served to exacerbate an already growing employment crisis. While the wealthy enjoyed the fine weather from beneath their parasols and from under the trees of their suburban villas, the homeless and poor made use of it by creating an open-air encampment in Trafalgar Square. Many had come into the centre of town looking for work at Covent Garden Market, where Londoners bought their produce, but a drought meant fewer boxes of plums and pears to lift and haul. With no money for lodgings, they slept rough in the nearby square, where they were joined by an increasing population of unemployed and homeless workers who would rather turn to the street than face the deplorable and demeaning conditions in the workhouse. Much to the horror of observers, these campers could be seen making their morning ablutions and scrubbing their vermin-infested clothing in the fountains directly beneath the nose of Lord Nelson, who peered down from high atop his column. When the autumn began to move in, so too did the socialists, the Salvation Army, and various charitable organisations, handing out Bibles, admission tickets to lodging houses, coffee, tea, bread, and soup. Tarpaulins were raised in makeshift bivouacs. Impassioned daily speeches were made between the paws of the giant bronze lions. The excitement, sense of community, and free refreshments swelled the